And it's not that you have to spend a lot of money to dress well, but when you open your budget a little bit more, you get more options. And as you open the number of options, the more likely you will find something that fits. So these suits tell me that he didn't want to spend a lot of money. So he probably had a limited number of things to choose from, and that's why he could not find something that fits him very well. And then you see these kind of guys that want to wear traditional clothing, but they don't want to look like their stuffy dad or grandpa or whatever. So they put on a pair of like fun shoes, which are basically fun socks for the rest of your foot. And I just think you should just choose a more tasteful pair of shoes. Yeah, it's not great. I think that is the one mistake, too, that I think if you're trying to dress better, don't think that you have to wear tailored clothing. I don't know what events these are and what his job is or anything, but, you know, if you want to dress better, you don't have to wear cheap suits with funky, whimsical shoes. You can just buy better casual wear, which can look better than a bad suit.
Derek, I can't contradict anything you're saying, but in my defense, when I bought those suits, they fit me.
Oh no, is that you? No. Is that you? I now have pie on my face. Is that you? I feel awful.
No, I do. It's not fair what I did to you. I set you up.
Oh my goodness.
No, it was all deserved. Everything you said is true. It's all true. But I want to talk with you about it because I need help.
You look amazing. I feel terrible.
Don't. Don't compromise yourself. This is my bad here. And I don't know what to tell you.
You look fantastic. Handsomeness takes you much further than most men, and you have that.
All right, I'm just going to pluck that line out and attribute it to you. Thank you very much for lending your expertise today. I really appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you for having me on.
That's your Canada Land podcast. I hope you had fun with the show this week. Our website is at canadaland.com. Bruce Thorson is our senior producer. Tristan Capicchione is our audio editor and technical producer. Thanks to Cherise Suturin and Archie Mann for help this week. Max Collins is our production manager. Karen Pugliese is our editor-in-chief. I'm your host, Jesse Brown. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV, 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. Jen Gerson, co-founder of The Line, freelance writer. How you doing?
So tired.
Starting off with that high energy.
Yep, there you go.
Jen, if there's one thing that I have learned over the years, a bit of wisdom for you, it's that the interior of British Columbia can get bat crazy. And today I'm going to take you there. I've got a story to tell. Also on the show today, if stepping aside when the time is right makes Joe Biden a hero and a patriot, then what do you call a prime minister who just won't leave? Welcome back to Shortcuts, Jen, where we talk about the news. Okay, Jen, sometimes an elected leader is revealed to sadly just be unfit for office. And when that happens, they suddenly find themselves facing overwhelming pressure to step down. And when that sequence of events occurs, big things can happen fast and everything can get pretty nuts. I'm speaking, of course, about what has been going down in Kamloops, BC. We'll get to Biden later. We'll get to Trudeau later, too. But we have to start with Kamloops. Can I tell you this story? This is so wild and I don't think people know this story.
You're going to have to tell me this story and I'm going to follow you down this rabbit hole. It sounds very entertaining.
All right. I have just learned of the existence of the mayor of Kamloops, Mr. Reed Hamer Jackson. He's got kind of a used car salesman vibe about him, and that might sound mean, but it's not, because he's a used car salesman. That was his job before becoming the mayor of Kamloops. He is as close to Rob Ford as any Canadian mayor that I have seen since Rob Ford, and he has just been a total train wreck since being elected in 2022. He is on the outs with the entirety of city council. They have called for his resignation. There's a non-binding motion that carried 8-1 vote calling for his resignation. He's been accused of bullying and harassment repeatedly. His counselors say that they've been subjected to repeated disrespect, violations of personal and professional boundaries, belittling, constantly disruptive behavior by the mayor. There have been multiple investigations into this allegedly unsafe workplace at City Hall, scathing reports. There have been findings that these accusations have merit. He got in trouble for secretly recording staffers, all sorts of issues and turbulence. He's been removed from his role as city spokesman, barred from accessing his office outside of working hours in order to protect staff from his bullying behavior. He's a piece of work, and this is going to shock you. He does not get on too well with the press in Kamloops, BC. I think that that probably carries through to a lot of people in the press, but Mayor Hamer Jackson has a particularly contentious relationship with this one talk show host, a guy named Brett Minear. I want to play you a little bit of an interview between Brett Minear and Mayor Hamer Jackson.
Hang on, let me finish.
Can you please let me finish?
Well, you've been doing most of the talking.
You bet I am, because it's been a long time since you let me on your show.
Well, actually, I've tried to get you on a number of times.
Oh, come on, Brett.
I have.
Yeah, when I'm in the middle of a council meeting. Good luck. Thanks.
One of the consistent allegations against you is of bullying. Harassment and bullying. And I'm just saying your conduct now in this interview is speaks directly to that.
Oh, does it?
I mean, it does.
Well, Brett, you've been very biased, very biased.
Are you okay these days?
I'm perfect.
Yeah, because right now you seem to be losing control.
Really? You've been talking BS about me for a long time, Brett.
I'm actually a talk show host, Reed. I'm literally
and you can
paid
say whatever
my,
you want,
I'm
Brett?
Literally paid for my opinion.
Yeah, well, guess what? That's a really good opinion you have.
Well, Your Worship, thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Brett. It's too bad you don't mean that.
All right, so that was painful. And this is all in the context of increasing pressure for this guy to step down. And all of that is background for what happened recently. Following this vote from council, voting 8-1 that the mayor should resign, the Monday before last, Mayor Hamer Jackson puts out this call to the press that he is going to be making an announcement. This is a surprise press conference. And when the press asks, what is this with regards to, he says it's about resignation consideration. So, a bunch of members of the press show up, and right off the bat, something's a little bit strange. It's held at this very scenic spot, you know, beautiful Kamloops, BC, and there's this vista in the background, and the mayor is surrounded by supporters, and they're really energized. They're like, they're punchy. And there's a video, you can see this. They're kind of like all riled up and kind of like, seem kind of defiant. And the press conference starts, and the mayor immediately zeroes in on the presence of talk show host Brett Minear.
Thanks for showing up. Holy, I can't believe, you mentioned the word resignation, and everybody shows up. I mean, we even got Brett Minear here. Nice to see you, Brett.
Thanks for pointing me out. And he's kind of got this shit-eating grin on his face. Like, he does not look like this is a humbled politician who's about to accept that it's all over. And he goes on to deliver this written speech.
Whether to resign isn't a decision I take lightly.
In which he explains that he's a great mayor.
All my motions were intended to contribute to a safer community and more fiscally responsible City Hall.
He's, you know, faced tremendous opposition.
It's frustrating having to deal with allegation after allegation.
Be negative pressure from council.
And then be muffled by council when I try to set the record straight.
Press has been out to get him. They want to cut him down.
It's frustrating to be misrepresented by various media.
But he's a great mayor, and that's why he's not resigning.
I have decided that I must stay on as mayor and run.
He's the sitting mayor who has called a press conference to announce that he's not resigning, and he announces he'll be running again.
And run in the next municipal election. Yeah!
Which would make a lot of sense if there was an election coming up, but there is not. He's announcing that he is going to be running again in 2 years' time. And he finishes this written statement and opens it up to questions. And the questions from the press are like, why are we here?
So, and for how long did you actually consider resigning?
That they're acting within legal
You know, it was back and forth. You know, it's back and forth. You know, I never really considered it. You know,
why did you call us here? What is this about? And they're asking, like, you said that this is about resignation consideration?
Resignation slash consideration is what you said to me.
That's right. He considered not to do it.
Why did you?
And while this is happening, he continuously and repeatedly starts chirping Brett Menear.
Brett, kind of interrupting here.
And at first, he's like, you know, Brett, you're standing in the way of a reporter who wants to ask me a question.
Hey, Brett, could you just back up a little? This people trying to...
Then he kind of
takes
it up a notch and starts to insult Brett for other reasons.
Brett, could you please move? This is Brett Menear from Radio NL, okay?
Yes.
The reason he showed up is because he heard the word resignation. So sorry, Brett. If you can let other people in there, thanks.
He says, yeah, Brett here's getting in the way.
He's still in the way.
He's not going to move.
What's the matter with you?
Why is he even here?
You called a news conference, so the news could be here.
Yeah, but not for you, Brett, okay? I couldn't believe you showed up, Brett. You're bad for this community. You're bad.
Brett here is a very negative guy.
He's got nothing to say nice. He's very negative. This is not the United States. Yep. This is Camel's Butte, BC. We have a beautiful community.
The whole time this is happening, Brett is being recorded by the mayor's son. Like the mayor's supporters are like sticking a camera in his face. He later says that people are kind of like physically, purposely getting in his way. Before you know it, the mayor's supporters start joining in on this anti-Brett Menear vibe.
Anyway, Brett, could you please, everybody wants you to leave, so why don't you just leave?
And they start yelling,
Brett, go home! 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 Brett, go home!
It gets kind of ugly, Jen. Like, it actually feels like a bit of an intimidating atmosphere for this talk show host. And he's sort of drummed out of it for being too negative. We heard a bit of Brett Menear. He's a talk show host. He's certainly opinionated. But he's like a member of the press. And here's like the mayor using the mayor's bully pulpit and soapbox and all of his supporters to kind of like, I guess deceitfully, arguably, get this guy there only to turn the crowd against Brett Menear. And Brett Menear ultimately takes his leave, goes to his car to drive away, and finds that somebody has blocked him in. Somebody has parked in such a way that he can't quite get to his car. Like, this actually becomes a bit of a scary scenario. Anyhow, Brett Menear does escape from this press conference, but I don't think I've ever seen anything like this. It does remind me of some things, but I'm not sure I've ever seen anything quite like this, Jen. How about you?
Okay, so firstly, I would start by saying, whenever you get a true, prolonged, established feud between a member of the media and an unhinged politician, as a member of the media, you should always regard this situation as a gift from God. I mean, journalists have made their careers on these kinds of situations, and God bless Brett Menear. I hope that he knows how to ride this particular chaos wave right into exactly the dream position that he wants to be in his life.
Do you have other instances in mind where reporters or media figures, their reputations were made by attracting the hatred of a politician?
Well, I mean, Rob Ford is the obvious one. I mean, there are lots of journalists who very correctly managed to establish themselves as young journalists on Rob
Daniel Ford. Dale, like, that really helped Daniel Dale.
Daniel Dale, Robin Doolittle, I would also say. She did a book on Rob Ford, great book on Rob Ford, good for her. This is always an opportunity for a journalist, and a journalist should always go into that kind of scenario instead of allowing intimidation tactics to force them to back down. They should eat these things, eat them, love it. soak it up. Treat it as the opportunity that it is.
Here's how Brett Minear is engaging with this opportunity. Here he is on Twitter. Apparently, I deserve this. To all the folks who've sent me messages of support and the colleagues who didn't let this slide today, thank you. But for those who think I deserve to be called a pedo or to be harassed and physically intimidated, I'm not going anywhere. To all the creeps justifying this who took the time to photograph me in my wife's car, shout things at me today, take a long, hard look in the mirror. If this grotesque behavior is something you're okay with, we've got problems as a city and society. Is he a bit too self-pitying here, do you think? What do you think?
No, I think he's eating it. I think he's great. He's doing what he needs to do in this scenario. So the other thing I would also say is that I want you to have Brett Minear on the show. I really feel like he should be doing the shortcuts with you. I think that that would be a much better show because I'm sitting here watching this from the sidelines, as are you. I think that Brett himself would be a much better interview.
I would love to talk to Brett Minear. We learned long ago on Shortcuts that when you get the person, if we're doing media criticism, it's almost like reviewing a movie and having the director on, being like, and that's why I give your movie the thumbs down, and then they defend the movie. It doesn't work.
Okay, fair enough.
You know what I'm saying? In a different context, I'd love to talk to the guy.
Right. So we could sit here and get into a big moralistic kick about politicians shouldn't be mean to journalists and this is bad, but politicians are going to be mean to journalists. It's an adversarial system. I don't think that the meanness is going to get dialed down. In fact, I think the meanness is only going to get dialed up considering where we are in the populist cycle that we're in. So the only response available to the journalist who's doing scrums, and I mean, I've done scrums, you've done scrums, we know what these are like. They're psychologically intimidating. They're intended to be psychologically intimidating. But the only way to deal with that reality, I think, is to psych yourself up for it. And you just have to eat and consume that aggressive and belligerent energy and try to transmute that internally into fuel for your work.
I'm embracing this just as a spectator. I know that we're supposed to say this is terrible, the targeting of the press is bad, and this is part of it's a sign of the times, and making a punching bag and a villain and turning your crowd against the reporter. I do think those things are wrong, but like, this is so funny. Like, this mayor, I have a very serious announcement to make about my resignation-related issues, and that announcement is, I'm not resigning, Brett and Minear. Like, what the what is going on?
Okay. And then, like, the other thing I would say is, like, the fact that this entrenched and terrible feud is happening in Kamloops just adds a pettiness factor to the whole thing that really amplifies the amusement enormously. And I just hope Brett Minear becomes famous as a result of this, because he deserves it, and good on him.
It's tremendous fun, and the only reason why I'm paying any attention to this at all is to laugh at this buffoonish mayor. Let's be clear about that. While people like me can laugh at buffoons like this guy, he was elected. He was elected for a reason. He was elected because people were unhappy with the way things are, and they wanted an outsider to come in and up, and that is how democracy works. This is the story of Rob Ford. This is the story maybe of Donald Trump. And playing out this game of the people bringing in somebody like that and then people like me just having a big old laugh at them, they usually have the last laugh.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
What does a Harris presidency mean for Canada?
Harris has a Canadian connection.
She spent several years in Montreal walking these streets.
But she knows Canada very well.
She does have ties to Canada. She lived in Montreal for 5 years, still has family here as well.
She was the new kid at Westmount High with a name many still don't know how to pronounce.
I know she has a fondness for the country.
In Canada, we say Kamala because we see K-A-M.
Yeah.
But it's really Kamala Harris.
Losers. What a bunch of losers. This is the extent of my media criticism here. Like, I just feel like we were losers 4 years ago when we ran these, like, oh, Kamala Harris spent 3 seconds in Canada. Here's her yearbook photo. The media were big losers then, and we're like double losers now for trotting out those same stories. What's the Canadian angle? What's the Canadian angle of everything that happened with Biden? What's the Canadian angle of Kamala Harris? You want to hear the Canadian angle, Jen? The Canadian angle is Joe Biden stepped down because he couldn't win, and he's hailed as a patriot and a hero. What is our prime minister's excuse? And it's incredible to me. The Beaverton picked up on this. They had a headline, aides explaining to confused Trudeau how an unpopular leader dropped a re-election bid. Aides to Prime Minister Trudeau have reportedly spent several hours attempting to explain how Joe Biden, a similarly left-leaning incumbent with low polling numbers, actually willingly chose to end his re-election campaign. It can happen. And the media played a role in it. The New York Times beat their drum day after day after day explicitly eventually, the editorial board of the New York Times said, to serve his country, President Biden should leave the race. The press can do this. They can go on a crusade and say these things.
Okay, well, wait
and the Canadian press will never do something. Even the Globe and Mail, they will never do what the New York Times did and actually take a position.
Okay, we're connecting too many dots here, man.
I'm doing it. I'm making the connection.
There's too much red string on this particular wall. All right.
This is my Canadian angle here.
Okay, correct. When Canadians do this lame, Kamala Harris went to Montreal, to a Montreal high school for 5 years. That's you're losers and you should stop. That's pathetic. I am looking forward to my plaque being put somewhere on the field of a high school in Port Moody at some point in the future, but I'm not counting on it. Like, let it go. It's very kids' table mentality, right? So, yes, I agree with there. Do I think that Joe Biden gave up the presidency because of the New York Times' hectoring campaign? Sorry to say it, Jesse, but no. I don't think the New York Times got the overwhelming vote on that one. I think it was the threatened internal Democratic coup surrounded by a bunch of senior Democratic names and leaders, both coming out publicly and non-publicly, telling him to get his ass off the chair that eventually forced Joe Biden to resign. The media didn't do it on that one. The media is not in the library with the pipe wrench in that particular game of Clue. All right. So there. Secondly, to what extent does the Canadian media have an obligation to hector Justin Trudeau to leave? I don't know, man. Like, do I think that the Globe and Mail's editorial endorsement is going to factor into Justin Trudeau's decision one way or the other? Not even a little bit. Justin Trudeau doesn't need an excuse to explain why he wants to stick around, because ultimately the accountability mechanisms to force him to leave would require the MPs in his caucus to have the internal grit to be able to enable them to push him out, and they don't have it.
It's like you're trying to not understand my brilliant point. It's not necessarily that it works. It's that there's a really big distinction in that, like, we never try. The role that the press is willing to assume in the States is somebody's got to be the voice of reason here. Somebody's got to talk sense to these people and speak truth to power. This is nuts. This guy, we all saw it in the debate. He's still clinging to power. He's got to face facts. It certainly didn't hurt turning up the pressure on that. And to anybody who, I mean, the New York Times is a central left-leaning paper, and to people who care about there not being another Trump presidency, that does have some degree of influence that is not zero influence. And that is a role that American press has traditionally played, and that the Canadian press, I think, is timid and cowardly and like, well, no, that's putting a hand on the scales. We don't do that. We're not going to,
I don't know. If you're going to make the argument that the Canadian press has been insufficiently hard on Justin Trudeau, I'm not entirely sure that that stands. And I'm not entirely sure it stands, considering all I've been hearing from Canadian pundits and Canadian media for the last year and a half is, of course, Justin Trudeau is going to go. He has to go. His polling numbers are so low. Why isn't he going yet? I mean, that literally has been the prevailing narrative within Canadian political reporting for the last year, man.
You don't see a distinction. You don't think there's a difference in those two modalities.
I think that picking on the Globe editorial board for not, like, forcing Justin Trudeau out.
Well, who then? Who has been as full-throated about this as the Times was on Biden?
Dude, like, everybody from the National Post to every single columnist I know has written a Why Won't Justin Trudeau Go column. Like, I wrote a column months ago that said I don't think he's going to go because his own internal psychology is going to make it impossible for him to step down ahead of a fight with Pierre Poilievre, and I don't think that the Liberal caucus has the spine to force him out, even though they can.
You think the lack of resolve is an internal party issue, not a media issue?
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Why would that be, though? Because they're all going to get destroyed, right? They're all going to lose their seats.
Okay, so you want to talk about why Justin Trudeau is not going to step down? Because I think there's two parts to that question. And as I said before we started recording, I spent 2 hours digging into both the Liberal and the Conservative Party's respective internal party constitutions to understand the minutiae of these particular problems just for you, Jesse. So strap in.
Already regretting asking. Okay, please proceed. Yes, tell me.
Okay, so firstly, I think the primary problem is that Justin Trudeau is psychologically unwilling or incapable to cede power. I think he sees himself as a messianic, once-in-a-generational, transformational figure. I think he sees Pierre Poilievre and the rise of the Conservative Party as a unique threat to democratic norms and institutions in the country. And I think that also he's personally irked by the man. I mean, so I remember seeing this video clip of Justin Trudeau and Pierre Poilievre going at it in question period. And the body language on those two men was so fascinating to me because you had Justin Trudeau making his question, and then you had Pierre Poilievre sitting back, and he was given this like arm wave thing, like, come at me, bro, come at me. And you could just tell the body language between these two men that they are engaged in a juvenile piss match with one another. They despise one another. Justin Trudeau wants to go.
He wants to win.
He wants to win.
And he's used to winning in his life, right?
And more than that, but he wants to fight.
Yeah.
So the idea that he would step down from a fight against that stupid twerp.
Yeah.
At this point, I don't think he's constitutionally capable of doing it. His psychological maturity, for lack of a better term, just isn't there. They're engaged in a toxic masculinity up with one another, and they're going to play this game out right to the end. So
they're not the most masculine dudes I've ever seen playing.
There's masculine as they get in political nerd circles. Okay, Jesse, you've got to give it. The bar's low here. All right. So I think that's the first, I think that's the biggest problem. Yeah. And then I think that also let's remember that you've got a Liberal government that's at the end of its term. All governments, Canadian governments at this point at the nine year cycle, they get fairly insular, weird, crazy, and bunker bound. That's what's happened in this case. You have fewer and fewer people in the prime minister's office who are actually advising the prime minister. Those people are increasingly sort of, as I said, inward focused. Everyone who's criticizing us is an enemy. Everyone out there is criticizing us is wrong. They're out to get us. It's all misinformation. And also what's also happening simultaneously, I think, is that more and more complicated decisions are not being delegated because the whole power structure of the party is now centered deeply in the prime minister's office.
Is that new?
No, this happened under Harper.
No, I mean, is this new for Trudeau? I mean, the PMO has been...
No, the Prime Minister's Office has been slowly more and more central to the power structure of the party over time, and that's just intensified, and now they're at the end.
Yeah.
So you're getting the bunker mentality stuff that's happening here. Internally, I don't think that they can have that conversation. And then I guess the other conversation is, well, who would replace Trudeau? Who's the person standing in the wings who you would trust to take the party on? I mean, Carney, maybe. I think Carney is more of a liability than an asset for the party. And then the other problem is who wants to be Kim Campbell, right? Like, who wants to take a party that's 20 points down in the polls and take them to a catastrophic loss off the side of a cliff, right? That's a pretty hard sell for any serious political candidate who has a mind to creating a legacy for themselves. And then you get to the problem about the accountability mechanisms around him, right? So do we need to talk Reform Act? Do we need to talk Westminster Parliament? Do we need to talk about confidence motions?
What is the most decentralized, succinct way that you make this point?
Essentially, since about 2016, the Liberal Party has neutered its internal accountability mechanisms and disenfranchised its party apparatus to such an extent that there is no internal party mechanism to force Justin Trudeau out. They have enshrined in their constitution the situations in which a new leadership vote can be triggered, and they have put in their constitution basically a leadership review vote can only be called in the event that the sitting party leader has lost an election. So they have enshrined in their constitution a mechanism to ensure that a sitting Liberal prime minister can never be subject to leadership review.
And if we're really talking honestly here about what happened with Biden, even as he's being congratulated as taking this wonderful patriotic stand and doing the right thing, the fact is he was forced out.
Yeah, he was forced out. Now, the Liberal caucus could force him out. The Liberal caucus absolutely does have a mechanism to force Justin Trudeau out. The Liberal Party does not.
Uh-huh. So it would have to be the caucus. But aren't those the people most likely to do it because they're the ones who will lose their jobs?
Well, this becomes the fundamental problem. Or they're the least likely to do it because they would lose their jobs.
And they're the ones who you accuse of cowardice, not the media.
Well, I don't know. I don't think the media gains or loses any cowardice by calling for Trudeau to resign. I mean, is that a bold statement for the Globe editorial board to be making at this point? I don't think so. I don't think it's a cowardice move one way or
Jen,
the other.
Check your paycheck. We're all paid by Trudeau. We're going to lose our jobs, too, if he's out, if the Liberals are out of office.
Well, I'm not. I'm not. Like and subscribe to The Line.
Oh, wait, I'm not either.
I don't take any government money.
We don't take that cash either. Subscribe to Canada Land. Jen, that is Shortcuts for this week. Thank you for joining me.
Very welcome.
Listen, you can email me about today's episode at jesse@canadaland.com. I read every email that people send me. Jen Gerson, one more time, where can people find you?
You can send me a note, lineeditor@protonmail.com, lineeditor@protonmail.com.
And check out The Line, Jen's publication. This episode is produced by James Nicholson with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our production manager is Max Collins. Our editor-in-chief, Karen Pugliese. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV, 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca.